to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, for headlines, former Blizzard president starts a tabletop company, and Critical Role launches a publishing company.
Oh, yeah.
And for our topic, I thought we would talk about gatekeeping.
Okay. So I've got a question for you, Jeremy.
Okay.
If you, air quote, manually stimulate someone with a skeletal hand, is it fingering or are you technically boning? Inquiring minds want to know.
We could go either way. I mean, both would be correct.
Does it matter if the skeletal hand is plated in gold? Does that change?
It makes it better. It makes it better. Yeah, it feels better, I think.
No, I just been spending all my time reading Harrow the Ninth by Tamsin Muir, which is part of the Locked Tomb trilogy. It was Gideon the Ninth, and now Harrow the Ninth, sent to me by Jamie. And that book is morbid and brought up that question in my mind.
Nice.
So no segue to the actual headline.
Right. Well, kind of. I mean, this is a guy that maybe should not have come back from beyond the grave.
Oh, okay.
So the former senior vice president of story and franchise development at Blizzard, so pretty well-known Chris Metzen, left Blizzard in 2016 after 23 years at the studio and said, I'm done. I'm retiring. I'm sitting on my couch. Because, you know, if you're early on enough in Blizzard, you have insane stock options. And after the Activision acquisition, I'm sure, they can just live off of
those royalties.
Yeah, their glory days. But he's back. Teaming up with Mike Gilmartin, they started a gaming club. They started Warchief, a tabletop gaming club located in Orange County, California, for hobbyists, wargamers, and role players, because he talked about his first loves being Dungeons & Dragons and Warhammer, and looking at the games Blizzard's made. Yeah, basically they're, you know, Games Workshop properties kind of reshaped. And that's been their inspiration for a while. So now they're going back to, and it wasn't clear, it was kind of vague about what future projects they were going to be heading, but they said it all was inspired by the club. So it was more than just a club. Warchief is also a premier development studio focusing on creating games and telling stories across all types of media. So Chris and Mike have recently announced that they are hard at work developing Worlds of Imagination under the Warchief banner.
Okay.
So I don't know if that means war games or settings for D&D, or I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But it's very funny because, I mean, this is a pretty big name, and he has had a big hand in a lot of the major storytelling in Warcraft. So we'll have to see. And so it's funny that the inspiration came from tabletop gaming in retirement. It's like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I want to make my own stuff.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it might be more of like a passion project, which, okay, if you're retired and you have the money to do it, great.
Right.
I don't know all that much about video games, but if you're kind of like the narrative person, yeah, I wonder what kind of games they are going to make, because my impression is that video games, even kind of like sandboxy ones that you're getting, are, because you're dealing with a program and a computer, more linear than tabletop role-playing games. So while I'm sure some of the skills in being a narrative designer translate over to writing tabletop games, you can't, I mean, you can put a narrative in it, and it's called metaplot, and I get the sense that most people don't really like that anymore. So I'm just wondering what of those skills kind of translate over, since you can't put out like a story in a tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder what they're thinking, and if they're looking at how crowded the market is. I mean, maybe just try to cash on, we're former Blizzard execs.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, and so that might lead them to crowdfunding and things, because they can cash in on their names and their reputation to try to get some attention. But yeah, it's a pretty crowded market, and everybody's making a miniatures war game, and everyone's doing content for 5e. So, you know, I guess if they distinguish themselves and if they have enough of a unique voice, maybe. But
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but I thought that was funny. I guess you can't stay in retirement forever when you're frustrated with the quality or maybe the storytelling of
Well, maybe that's what sparked it.
Yeah, yeah, right. In a world where you can get a Netflix special by being popular on TikTok.
Okay, yeah.
This would have been something that would have been unbelievable, you know, decades ago.
Right.
Is a group of people playing Dungeons and Dragons together and then videotaping it has become a huge presence in the industry, right? So this leads to probably something that would never have happened before, but Critical Role is now launching a tabletop game publishing company. So previously they worked with Green Ronin, Fandom, and Wizards of the Coast to produce various books based on things that came up in their campaigns, but now they're going to do it themselves. So Darrington Press was announced today. So Matt Mercer and the Critical Role team are launching Darrington Press. Darrington will be led by Ivan Van Norman. And you might know him from Hunter. He was running Hunter's Entertainment and so worked on Alice is Missing, Altered yep. Carbon, Outbreak Undead.
One of those I backed.
Yes.
It wasn't Altered Carbon.
Sorry, he was also the game producer for Will Wheaton's Tabletop.
Oh, well, at least that game, at least that show, which I only watched a couple episodes, promoted a whole bunch of different games.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So, that gave you a good taste of what was out there. But it had Will Wheaton. Anyhow.
Ouch. So, all right.
So they've already announced four new games that coming out next year. Okay. Yeah. The first was Uk Otoa. The tabletop game is a battle for life and death on the Lucindian Seas. This was a game that I guess they were holding onto the game design for years. Now this is a chance to actually publish it. So it's
like a board game from what I saw.
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah, it seems like a lot of these, I think only one of these is actually a role-playing.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I got the sense it was none of them, but I didn't read them all that closely.
So that will be the first one coming in first quarter of 2021, if the world goes well. Yeah. The next in second quarter is Critical Role Adventures. So you can play the characters of Vox Machina. So embark on your own journeys through Exandria with the Critical Role Adventures.
I'm glad this is audio-only podcast. No one can see my face.
Right. And I guess they've made an effort to not like just make you play through things you've already listened to. Like you're not going to play
I've not listened to the show. I don't care one iota about those characters, but that was what my first thought too. Are you just going to play these characters and replay the adventures you already listened to? And you know what? Even if you did, I'm sure there's a market for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, this time we can ship these characters and there's all kinds of stuff to do in that setting. Quarter three will bring us Syndicult. So this is another RPG product. So Syndicult is set outside of Exandria. So it'll be the first thing that kind of doesn't take place in their established world. It'll be part of a mob of families in the modern magic world. They guard secrets while battling for power. And the last one, so fourth quarter will bring us Guardians of Matrimonia. So Guardians of Matrimonia is a game of pre-built decks in which players are pitted against party-crashing monsters. So this is a wedding party?
That's the first thing I thought. And so they're also doing deck-building games, all right.
Right.
Or not deck-building games.
Yeah. So the game is over if any of the players runs out of cards and win if the monsters run out first.
Okay.
Pretty big variety. So I guess if they're bringing other talent in, then they're going to be doing more. How far can they extend this brand? But I guess if they're going to stream these games, like they're going to, you know, preview these games on their stream to their critter audience, that's a huge market.
Well, I think depending on how these, again, I'm not a business professional by any sense of the word, depending on how those games do and how those games actually play, I mean, Critical Role already has a massive audience.
Right.
So they already have their customer base that's rabidly loyal. So I'm sure these games are going to get bought even if they aren't on the Critical Role stream.
Right.
But I bet they will be, which is just more advertising. When this got announced, I saw, of course, chatter on Twitter saying WotC should probably be paying attention to this. Because if anything, this is something that could challenge D&D's superiority.
Right. And it wouldn't take much for them to say, oh, yeah, I guess we're not going to play 5e anymore. We have our own rule set that we're going to,
I think they would lose some of their audience if they did that. But based on what little I've watched, they're not really playing. Okay.
Yeah.
It's they're not really playing visible, D&D. Yeah. And I'll say that is coming from someone who believes that pretty much any game not run by the original creator is not technically that game anymore, right? As soon as you change little bits, you're no longer playing the same game. So me saying they're not playing D&D is not me saying, oh, they're getting all these rules wrong and it's wrong. It's just, no, they're playing their own game just by the fact of who's running it and who's playing it. I don't think they would lose that much of their audience to then say, we're playing this other game over here. Because I think they're originally playing Pathfinder.
Right, I think so. Yeah.
Maybe not streamed and maybe not with the audience they currently had. But
I'm curious how system loyal the audience would be. And they're like, I like these characters. I like these sessions. So I don't care what game they're playing.
I think there's some of the fan base that's that. And then I think there's some of the fan base who, depending on who made the accident or the rule slip up, people then get hammered with
Yeah.
The rules lawyer saying, you're playing it wrong, blah, 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 blah. So.
Yeah, just seeing this announcement just made me realize how amazing this is and how we're in such a unique time where you can take a very small amount of success and then just kind of roll that into a huge empire of,
well, I feel like crap media. Now because I've had a very small amount of success and I have yet to see any kind of rollover to any kind of an empire.
Well, you didn't do the right voices, I think.
Or any. Yeah, okay.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, that is unique for this time because the focus, the attention, the legitimacy, I guess it's a kind of a mean thing to say, but the legitimacy they're bringing to tabletop role playing has not been done before, and no previous company has even figured out how to come close to this kind of getting this in everyone's face and say, yeah, I think I might want to do that.
I wonder if, and maybe this is an unfair comparison, Critical Role is the D&D of streamed games, where they were kind of the first, or maybe kind of the biggest, and then by those two factors alone have retained the lion's share of the market, right? It's like they're the juggernaut because no one was really in a position to challenge them when they were challengeable, and now it's a practically insurmountable task.
No, that's true. Yeah, and yeah, I think they took quite a bit advantage of their lead. Yeah, have done well with it. As much as I don't like really participate or enjoy, you have to admire that, you know, kind of success.
Yeah.
So that brings us to our topic. This is no segue, but this brings us to our topic. Maybe kind of in the future, there may be.
I've seen some situations where yeah, this has happened in the critter community. Right.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about gatekeeping, not as a defense of it or an attack on it, but just kind of.
Oh, so we're going to both sides this thing.
Yeah, right. An examination of what this is like, where this came from, and why people do it. And I think instead of being frustrated by it or disgusted by it, like understanding kind of the origins or the motivations of people that are doing this is important, so that it may not be an insurmountable thing, and it may be many organizations of, you know, social groups or organizations of people have a kind of hazing or a jumping in or something that you need to pass a certain bar to kind of be part of the social group. And unfortunately, with nerdier types of media, it becomes a little obsessive and a little weird. And I can just remember, you know, like early comic shops as a kid being really oppressive places and not welcoming. Like some people ran their comic book stores to keep people out.
Right.
They didn't want little kids wrinkling the books.
Who does?
You know, they wanted people to just, you know, give me your pull list and, you know, tell me what kind of books you like, so I'll recommend more for you to buy. It wasn't a very welcoming place. And then I had the experience where the owner of a comic shop gave me first issue of something, say, you have to read this. And then I bought, you know, kept buying the series because it was such a great recommendation. Yeah, those things do change, but I can remember gatekeeping in a lot of nerdy ways. And even in role playing, I was kind of weirdly too young for the back room of the local hobby store. So I was always out of that and like, oh, someday. And then we moved away. So that someday never came. And then I think they went out of business. But I did feel that, but more based on age and maturity and like they were going to be doing things.
I kind of had a similar thing. Like when I first started getting into Warhammer and Magic, and my God, I wish I had the money I sank into those hobbies back. You know, there was kind of like, I was too young. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to go towards like the back of the store where people were playing, or like the first couple times I did that, I felt someone kind of like took advantage of me when like playing Magic. I'm kind of like, oh, now I'm like, oh, that kind of sucked. Right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I understand that. But I also understand not wanting age, especially not wanting like little kids to kind of run around and mess stuff up.
Right.
In a larger sense, like gatekeeping, I do understand at least one of the motivations, right? Like for people who have sunk a lot of time and money into a hobby, you want to, and I'm sure I've said this before, you want that investment to feel like it's worth something. To do that, one way is to kind of make people who haven't sunk that amount of time or effort into whatever hobby you're doing feel like they don't belong in that club, right? Like I've done something that I want to be valuable, therefore I have to make people feel like if they haven't done that thing, they can't be part of this club.
Right. So I have a question for you. You've mentioned in the past that you don't like the term lore.
Okay.
Does that have a connection to gatekeeping and kind of how it's used, or what's your kind of uncomfortable?
Mostly it's a word that I feel gets overused.
Ah.
And mostly it like when I run a game or when I play a game, like I don't really care what's in the book. I care what's happening with the players and the characters in the story, and saying, oh, well, according to lore, it's like, I don't care. Did it pop up at our table? No, then it doesn't exist. Right. I don't really care. But then, yeah, you mentioning that now, it also does have a little bit to do with gatekeeping, where people talk about like the lore and they've studied up on, you know, all the background and lore, and not always, that can be a way to gatekeep, Mm-hmm. You know, say, okay, yes. you don't know this thing. You haven't studied up on this thing. So you are therefore not part of our group.
Right. And I think, like you mentioned, Warhammer, I think in like 40K, that comes up quite a bit. Like the lore masters are keeping people. It's like, this is your, this is what you think Space Marines
look like. Oh, yeah, yeah.
When we talk about the early adopters of tabletop role playing, who was playing that in the, you know, 70s and 80s and the little AV rooms in
basements with shag carpeting.
Right. So those people were basically socially not doing incredibly well, or they would have been at the football games or at their student council meetings or whatever. They had a group of friends that had similar interests, history or math or whatever, that connected them to those role playing systems and that, you know, fantasy history and things. So it was basically a social escape. It was a refuge for people to find. And it was just this hobby that was bringing them together, because maybe even in school, they weren't all that close. But in their gaming group, they could feel, you know, some sort of connection. So we had that original group. And I think that's where a lot of, you weren't welcome there unless you were kind of socially, a bit of a social outcast. But then kind of a second wave came. And I think that's what's caused kind of a schism in the tabletop, like more recently, like story games versus very heavy, you know, system game, maybe more old school. System games, is then the theater kids found out about role playing and like, wow, I can do voices and I can be a character and I can think about my motivations. And, you know, so like we talk about spotlight time and things. It's like things that definitely sound like they came from
theater,
high school theater club. Okay. And people like being more interested in the story than the mechanics or the, you know, the lore or making the world. It's just like, no, what would my character do in this situation? And so those are two really incompatible groups, because you have introverts and extroverts trying to, like, those groups aren't going to mix. And I think that's where a lot of clash comes between, like, you want to do this and I don't want to do this.
I could see, like, I can see that even in terms of like big groups of introverts and extroverts are kind of like the theater, and I can't think of an analogy for like the original kind of rules heavy thing. So yeah, look, those two schools of thought, I can see them clashing. Mm-hmm. I can also see them clashing if you have individuals like that within a gaming group. I mean, like, how many DM questions are around the idea of balancing spotlight time and people not being happy if the game's only combat and other people not being happy if all they got to do was talk? But yeah, so I do kind of see the potential for that sort of thing popping up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then it's interesting as we're kind of entering an age of, you know, inclusivity and kind of like being very mindful of the kind of stories we're telling and how we're portraying certain, you know, like fantasy races and things, that things have to be more opened up. And then so that, I think that just makes people defend things a little harder, you know, in some ways. Either defend, no, we have to be completely open and we have to be completely safe for everyone at the table. And then things like, you know, safety tools and things are invented. And then the older thinking is just like, no, if you can't handle it, stay out of my club, stay out of my basement, you know, just, you know, they really don't want to be disrupted, you know.
I think I'm not sympathetic, but I can at least understand that. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a sense where, again, if you've devoted a lot of time and effort and money even to a hobby, on the one hand, introducing that hobby to new people or welcoming new people into that hobby gives you new people to talk to and new people to share that interest with.
Right.
And kind of that's kind of the goal of a hobby, right? You now have more people to talk to. On the other hand, I can understand not wanting to devote kind of time and energy into teaching someone how to do that hobby. So, like, I'm not saying you shouldn't let people in. I'm saying I kind of understand a little bit of the pushback where, like, if you have a gaming group that's been together for a while and someone new comes in who hasn't played the game, you're going to have to devote time to them to teach them to play and for them to kind of like catch up and get comfortable. And after you do that, you have this new person who you can play with and have this experience with. And that's going to be great. I understand the reluctance for some people to want to devote that time when they could spend that time enjoying the hobby rather than, I'm going to say, babysitting, which is kind of a, maybe not a fair word, but I'm sure that's how some people see it.
If tabletop role playing has been a refuge for you, and especially if like childhood memories or earlier memories of it, it's like, yeah, this was a safe place for me to be a nerd, and nobody made fun of me, and this was really fun to be like this. And I think then if you return to it back in later life and still have that thinking of you know, this is my refuge, and you are disturbing it. Your very theatrical character voice is bothering my.
Well, it's kind of like, and it's, I guess, not stereotype, but it's, I've seen that argument before, right? Where people complaining about, oh, now the popular kids are playing D&D.
Right,
or now
right.
the popular kids are doing this, where I understand the sentiment, especially if you had the unfortunate kind of experience of being that nerd who got stuffed in those lockers, and the only place you were able to feel safe is down in the basement rolling D20s. Mm-hmm. Play a different game, my God. Right? But like I understand that feeling, mm-hmm. even if I don't necessarily agree with it, right? Like yeah. you, honestly, you got to let that go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I understand why you would feel that way.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely things to, between those two groups, those kind of two generations, there's definitely things to be learned and things to be exchanged that'll make both experiences better. But, you know, if you're stuck in your ways, if this is this is how you play, this is how we've always played, then it's a bit hard. This reminded me a lot. I was listening to an essay, a video essay of someone talking about Star Wars.
Okay.
And they were talking about how the original trilogy and then starting in the prequel and then, of course, the sequel, Star Wars went from a myth.
Right.
To an allegory.
Okay.
So it was talking about something universal and good versus evil and something that kind of had to have a conclusion because it was mythical.
Okay.
Heroes of light, heroes of darkness. And then something changed because the world kind of changed and that was not, that simplicity is not what we wanted. We wanted something more complicated. We wanted something that reflected the outside world.
Okay.
And so that's why you got kind of Bush Jr. references in the prequel trilogies and things. So we wanted something that had the complexity and the gray area felt more realistic, so it moved away into real world allegory. Things represented things in the real world. And I definitely think that's probably where people also differ. Mm. Like, I don't want real world outside events to be reflected in my game. This is pure myth. This is pure fantasy. But I think a newer generation does want that. They want the kind of social complexity. They want to represent themselves politically, you know, how they see themselves in the world. They want to represent themselves in the game in that same way.
Possibly. I'll also say, I think another, I guess, getting kind of into politics, another stance on the kind of no politics in my game, mm-hmm. that in and of itself is a political statement. You're in a position where you don't really have to think about politics you're kind of like the default person or you know, kind of the default identity. And other people saying, no, like politics are built into our lives just because of who we are. Mm. And to be able to ignore that mm-hmm. is a political statement. So by saying politics in my game, they're already there.
Yeah,
they just align so clearly that you don't see them.
But that's definitely more recent thinking.
Okay,
because people of every race, color, and culture, and language, and everything enjoyed Star Wars. There wasn't...
Okay, that is a broad statement, but I don't think I can disagree with it. Okay, yeah, sure,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just talking about the financial success of it and everything.
Okay, sure.
Reflects the fact that everyone could relate to it, and it was all white people.
What?
I'm saying that when things are mythical, you're not looking for yourself in that. You're looking for these deeper universal stories, and you're not looking for smaller, complicated details, and that's why you can enjoy certain... That's why D&D is having such a difficult time fending off current criticism, is because we're looking for analogs in the real world about what you're talking about. Originally, we're just talking about forces of life and death or order and chaos. And well, once you start aligning those to real world situations and things, it gets ugly. It feels very, yeah.
I'll agree with that. Once you start aligning it to real world things, things get ugly. But I might be going off track and bring it back around. But I think... If everyone was able to enjoy Star Wars regardless of your identity, mm-hmm. I think it was an in spite of mm-hmm. or despite the fact the cast and the original was largely all white
mm-hmm.
rather than being a kind of not identifying. It was if that makes sense. It's like, okay, this was a commercial success. People can like it. For some people, it was a I like it, but or it would have been better. I can look past these things, whatever.
Right. I think it's mythical in nature, and it's the simplicity, the non-complex way that the story was presented just struck a chord, you know, just like, you know, people just responded to that. But we don't want that anymore. And that's why Star Wars can't be that anymore. And that's why tabletop, you know, can't be that anymore. And so gatekeeping, and like you're saying, if you're trying to keep politics off of the tabletop, or you're trying to keep people doing it a certain way, it's going to be difficult because, a lot of sensibilities have changed and people are just aware of more things going on, even in their entertainment.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. Yeah.
So I guess that was a meandering discussion of gatekeeping. Yeah, I think it's just something to keep in mind. And just like any social group, if you're able to nerd your way past, you know, someone's... gatekeeping defenses, maybe that is a satisfying position, you know, to have finally like impressed someone with your knowledge of the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, and I've gotten the senpai notice me because of I've memorized all this Forgotten Realm lore. Oh my God.
So that's the moral of this story. It's a frustrating thing, but it's bound to exist because when people organize into social groups, they always want to have some sort of security gate. There's always metal detectors at the door.
No, I don't know how you can avoid it in the larger picture, but I do agree that once people kind of start forming into groups, there's kind of an us and a you, right? But like, I think I would want that membrane to be permeable, mm-hmm. where like the you are people who are just not interested in this thing, opposed to people who aren't interested enough.
Yeah, and keep it in mind, like the harder someone is gatekeeping you, probably the less fun it's going to be if you actually made it past that gate anyhow. You
know, at least for that person, right.
And so it's like the Woody Allen line. I wouldn't want to belong to a club that would have someone like me for a member.
Right.
Yeah. So you may be enjoying kind of grilling them or showing them how dominant you are in a certain popular culture, but is that really the atmosphere that you
No,
want?
And if you're the type of person who would do that, not interested.
Right. Yeah. So I mean, it's a good sign about what the group is going to be like anyhow. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I am tweeting at Harrow the Ninth spoilers, because that's the book I'm currently reading, as well as a couple parenting tweets mixed in there, because that is pretty much the extent of my life, those two things. Yes. Yeah.
So necrophilia and parenting.
Spoilers, but yeah, there's implied necrophilia in that book. Yeah, right. I think, yeah. Sort of the peanut butter and chocolate. Yeah, necrophilia and parenting tweets. Wow. When you put it that way, I have a very interesting life, don't I? Okay. Anyway.
So if you'd like to support the weekly, please visit idleredhands.com and you can support us on Patreon or a recurring or one-time donation. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.